What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lueb of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps. Woo!
And welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. So, there are shockingly few horror films about New Year's Eve that we haven't already covered. We did Bloody New Year. We did New Year's Evil.
Did Kyle pick Bloody New Year?
No.
Was Kyle on Bloody New Year?
Nope. That was Brian Berger. But my point is that we've kind of stepped away from even trying to do New Year's Eve-related horror movies. But this year we got a remake of Terror Train and figured, well, if we were ever going to cover it, this is the year to cover the original, the 1980 Terror Train. Did not realize this until researching for this, that the remake takes place on Halloween night instead of New Year's Eve.
That explains why it came out in October. I remember me saying to you guys, I think I said it just to you guys. Why? I don't think I said it in the group, but I was like, why the fuck are they releasing a New Year's Eve movie in October?
There you go.
That explains it.
I have some thoughts about that change. It just makes a lot of sense, dude. It's confusing that there's a Halloween costume
is that a
party.
Thing?
It's
Was
not
that a thing in the
80s? No, it can't be.
No, it's never been. Listen.
It can't be.
The biggest horror of the movie Terror Train is the idea that I would spend my New Year's Eve trapped on a train in costume with a bunch of magicians.
Also, classmates that you could be away from for the holiday break. Like, you could literally not be anywhere. I understand that Greek life is all about, like, whatever the fuck Greek life is about, which I guess is being on a train together for New Year's.
Do you realize that we started 2022 with Pledge Night, which is about a frat, and we're starting 2023... equally stupidly.
Should we just do college? Should we do shitty college movies for New Year's? Shitty college movie night.
Next year we'll do
House on Sorority.
Van Wilder. I don't know.
The House That Dripped Blood.
Yeah.
Which I think we've done that,
but we haven't done Dorm That Dripped Blood.
That's what I meant. The Dorm That Dripped Blood.
But then we could also do To All a Good Night on Christmas, which is a frat horror movie.
Okay.
Yeah, look at this.
Look at us.
This is how badly we don't want to talk about Terror Train that we're just planning out the rest of the year. So I don't hate Terror Train. I'm going to start with the hot take out the window. Mm-hmm. I don't hate this movie.
Yeah.
Now, some people did. Roger Ebert had this on his most hated list.
Wow. Most hated.
The writer of this movie
also has it on his most hated list.
No, his wife apparently wasn't really onto this. So the idea, I pulled this trivia verbatim. The idea for Terror Train came from a dream that writer Daniel Gordonick We're going to go with that.
Yeah, that's
had cool. One weekend night after seeing the films Halloween and Silver Streak, he woke up and said to his wife, "What if we put Halloween on a train?" To which his wife said, "That sounds terrible." He jotted down "Terrible Train" on a piece of paper on his nightstand, and then in the morning changed the title to "Terror Train" and wrote up a 22-page treatment and quickly made a deal with Sandy Howard's team at 3 in the afternoon that morning.
That's all it takes to get a movie made?
Honestly, it was once. It was once.
Anymore? Damn it.
It can't be anymore. There's no way. Because this is, I mean, oh my God. I love
how
that.
How much coke
do
you have to do to be like, sure, it's Halloween on a train, but make it New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they got Jamie Lee, which is, yeah, you know, kind of crazy. I know, I guess this was, it's still early, but it's not. I mean,
it's early enough, but this was the very end of Jamie Lee, the Scream Queen. I'm pretty sure this was the final one for many, many
prom
years.
Night was, when was Prom Night?
Prom Night was released 3 months before this one.
Fuck. Oh.
She finished filming Prom Night and immediately went to film this
Same
one. She
hairdo.
Was like making a killing up in Canada because all these were shot up there.
And your dollar goes further. So,
yeah. So, so
you can ride that train longer, guys.
Damn it, Scott. Ah. I was so close.
So the opening scene to this movie, the whole, I would say the first like 10 minutes of this movie was apparently filmed a month after they had completed the film because they were like, shit, we need to give an origin story to this Kenny guy, which feels all the more insane to imagine that this movie just starts off with a bunch of college students getting dropped off on a train. And then like the only reveal would have been in that line of dialogue where they're like, yeah, we used to do this like bonfire thing, but like we weren't allowed to anymore after what happened a couple years ago or whatever. That was the only hint to Kenny's origins in the original.
Is that they version. Really? They never. I mean, look, I don't know, but they never dived into more details on the train about no
I
more
remember.
Specifics. I guess not. Maybe I guess it would be in flashback that they dropped in afterwards. Yeah. But holy shit.
There are okay. no flashbacks.
I wanted to bring up two more things about the actor who played Kenny real quickly, and then we'll dive into discussing
this. Yeah, I'm
going
to need to know more.
So there was a 2010 interview with him, Derek McKinnon. So Derek McKinnon said in this interview that he got the role by mistake. He wasn't even auditioning for it. He brought a good friend in for an audition, and when he walked in, they saw him and said, "Do you want to audition?" He had no idea what he was auditioning for, but he had a drag show that he was doing, and they kept pursuing him over and over again to do it.
Oh, wow.
He said the director saw him on stage and said he needed him for the movie. The other thing was that he looked convincingly enough to David Copperfield that it could be he could work as a red herring.
Dude, it worked for me, and I've seen this movie 3 times. I forgot.
Yeah, I forget it every time.
I love that David Copperfield had like creative insight into the making of Terror Train.
Yeah,
that's nuts.
Did they
that's
need his
insane.
Name on there to like get it made or like get
well,
a little
no,
bit more money?
Well, no, this was
money.
Like before he was that.
Yeah, he wasn't
yeah.
that
popular.
Big.
He
yeah.
wasn't that big.
He hadn't well, not with a haircut like that.
Disappeared the Statue of Liberty. Yeah.
So he said that he did 4 callbacks and they finally said, "You've got the part." And then he leaves.
4 callbacks for that.
And they asked him, "Do you understand what just anymore. Happened?" And he said, "Yeah, I got to play a small part in a movie." And they said, "No, you just signed up to be the lead in a movie with Jamie Lee Curtis." So he had like no idea what
I'm
was going
go into
on.
Everything I do now, aloof, so that I don't. So all my expectations are met and exceeded.
Exactly. But then he also said, and I thought that this was kind of cool. He also said in a 2010 interview that the writer had originally wanted him to kiss Ben Johnson in a scene of the movie while he was still disguised as the female assistant, but Derek didn't want to do it. He said, "I was really upset. I mean, I'm dealing with this Academy Award winning star and I never met who is directing it, and I had never met Ben before, so I was totally freaked out, and it was the 80s and you just were not allowed to kiss another man back then." But then Ben Johnson found out and called me into his trailer and said he was fine with doing the kiss and wanted to know why I wouldn't. We talked it out and we agreed to do it, and we did film the scene, but it ended up on the cutting room floor anyway. But like, I do, you know, for 1980, for them being like, "Yo, we're hiring a drag queen to play this character, we're going to put a queer kiss into this movie." People might not realize it when they're watching it at the time, but it was like, it's that does sound like it was kind of pushing a boundary that like wasn't really pushed in an yeah. early 80s, late 70s horror movie just yet. So I do want to give this movie credit for like, I do think that they felt like a lot of the complaints about this movie was like, they didn't know what they were doing. They were just throwing something together. They had no direction. I'm like, no, I think that they actually did have I think that the blueprint of this movie really works for me. Like a killer that's killing people at a costume party, changing into costumes. Yeah. Like it's like that's a cool idea. There's the whodunit idea. Like you said, I've watched this movie a million times and I always forget that it's the magician's assistant. I'm always like always David forget. Copperfield's the killer. I think I've actively told people David Copperfield's the killer.
Yes, yeah, that's a selling point. And then, and then when they're like David Copperfield's not the killer, you're like I gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I gotta say one thing about this movie. I'm gonna give it credit because it falls into the long history of queer murderers. Mm-hmm. Or queer monsters. I was actually thinking about this like in depth recently. You know, like vampires. Why do they scare white men? Because they're going to kiss your neck and make you gay. Yeah. You know, women like vampires because they want to be seduced. Like that's what the Victorian ideal of a vampire is, right?
Yeah.
But the Victorian ideal of a vampire, you know, for men is like, oh no, they're gonna make me queer. And they obviously get a Southern accent when they say
that's what I say every time someone picks a vampire movie around here.
It's gonna make me queer. Unless it's James Woods in the vampire killing role.
No, that one
that
make
makes
me a
it
man
totally straight
with a capital M.
Yeah, no, that's one thing. And then you know, there's zombies. They're gonna bite you and make you gay, and then there's the drag queen that's gonna kill you and make you gay. Like it's like every horror is queer horror, like queer horror is horror. It's just I've been thinking about that a lot. That so many, I mean, and I don't mean that in like a, it's not always a good thing, because we've had that conversation about that with Sleepaway Camp, where you're like vilifying trans people. Well, at the time, I guess it was more of. I don't even know if that's the thing. We've been back and forth about that. And what's our 2023 assumption about Angela in the original Sleepaway Camp? Is she trans or is she just?
I remember the email that we got way back in the first year of Horror Movie Night when we did Sleepaway Camp as episode 50. Mm-hmm. That was written to us by a trans listener, and they were saying how they loved the story of Angela because it captured what their own fear was, which was in Angela's case, someone being forced to be the gender that they weren't feeling like they were supposed to be. But in a weird fucked up inverse of their birth gender was their proper gender and they were forced to be a different gender, and how it captured a lot of that anxiety and stress. Now, a lot of that goes out the window when in part two, they're just like, and they had a sex change, but like, looking at it from just that little lens, it's like I think that a lot of the time, especially with horror, that sometimes the stuff that ultimately feels problematic 30 years ago, at the time that they were writing it, they probably felt like they were doing something helpful.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're talking about. What did we just talk about? We were saying the exact same thing. You know, it's tale as old as time, guys.
I think that they feel like they're doing something where they're like, we're gonna rattle some people's minds about this, and then like 30 years later you're like, ooh.
I mean, there's a small group of people that set out to make something that is, and I'm not talking like edgelordy, like that's a whole other demographic. I just mean somebody with like not even bad intentions, just like apathetic intentions. Like nobody goes into like making a movie that has any content that is subversive without knowing or hoping to say something, even if it's like a slasher movie, like even if it's Sleepaway Camp. Like nobody's going in being like, I'm going to destroy trans kids right now. Like, no, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, I don't think anybody has, few people have intentions like that. And if they do, their movies aren't fucking seen or they're talked about negatively immediately.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You know, but I would say Angela's a traumatized trans youth. It just happens to be like a spin on that, like, story, you know, sort of like what would be like the reverse, I guess.
But now that we've unpacked all of that, let's talk Terror Train a little bit. A movie that even when watched in Blu-ray is still inexplicably very hard to watch.
It looks so bad. Like, I watched it on Shudder. Did you guys watch it on Shudder, or did you watch your own copies?
I have my own copy. I watched it on Tubi because I was editing, so I don't have a Blu-ray player down here. But But I think it's the same. I think it's the same Screen Factory transfer.
It is. I don't know how Screen Factory kept it so. It's It is impossible to see what's happening in shots on this train.
That's what I love. That is one thing I love about Terror Train, is that it's like the more things change, the more they stay the same. The first time I watched this movie would have been 1997, and watching it in 2022 when I watched it, doesn't look any better. Yeah. You know, it looks the same.
Yeah, it looks just like your VHS tape. Yeah. I think my first exposure to this movie was through Going to Pieces, The Rise and Fall of the Slasher Movie, which is kind of how I saw a lot of the non-main slasher movies, was I was like, oh, Terror Train looks fun, and then threw it on the Netflix queue and waited for the disc to come in the mail, and then bought a copy for myself afterwards. But it's... I'm curious about the remake, because I don't think that this is the worst slasher film of the 80s. I don't even think it's close to the worst slasher film of the 80s.
Me giving it shit, I want to be completely clear, is not...
Yeah. I think it's dumb. Also not the best. It's not like...
Oh, no.
But I do think that there's enough good things in this movie that it is slightly, like, underrepresented in the dialogue of 80s slasher movies, because I think that there's cool ideas in there.
There are, yeah, bigger things happening in this than there are in a lot of other slasher movies. Like, there's bigger concepts happening here, or just, like, even set pieces. A train, maybe. Yeah.
A train in a warehouse that they had to shoot at night so you couldn't see that they were in a warehouse the whole time.
Yeah.
The scene that they add it to the beginning of the movie is this bonfire, right? There's these people sitting around the bonfire. They're having this conversation about how, like, this is the night that all the pledges have to get laid.
Bonfire.
Yeah, bonfire night. That's the big night. And
Dongfire night.
Dongfire. Oh. That's what they should have referred to it as.
I should have been a frat.
Yeah, but then Kenny gets pranked.
And I actually really like that scene. I just want to say that's my favorite part of the movie, which is why it's such a hard watch.
Mm-hmm. So here's my two notes about that scene. One, I feel like it's a really weird way to have sex with all of these weird flashing lights happening all around you to begin with. That's like a little too much ambiance. And also, I don't know how I would react if that prank was put on me, but I don't think standing on a bed spinning in a circle while screaming would be my reaction.
I don't think that you can predict what your reaction would be.
That is true.
I
think my first reaction would be to get as far away from the corpse as possible, not to stand above it.
We all have to try a Creature Feature Weekend and see if we can make it happen for you, Matt. See what your reaction is.
I feel like throughout this movie, they try to, like, explain away this shit by being like, you know, because we're medical students, which makes me think it's even more fucked up that a medical student would just be like... Yeah, bringing like a corpse hand to a barbecue
You have a set. You have a set of ethics. Like, you have to follow.
You have a Hippocratic oath to uphold.
Yeah.
It's insane. This is the stuff that they filmed after the fact to give us something. And then
that
we get
really
on the train.
Blows my mind.
That's incredible.
I did not know that, and that's really wild. Because I agree. It's kind of, like, it's some of my favorite stuff besides maybe the last like half hour, which I think ties. You know, it just the book ends up they're great.
The middle's a little rough, but the middle gives us, like, I think that they do a good job with putting our killer, who doesn't have that high of a body count, which is part of why the middle drags a little bit, but, like, every costume change, it's like they found the perfect creepy costumes to put him in. Yeah. Like, the Groucho Marx mask, the old man mask, and then the snake mask. Like,
I love
all three of them work so well for me. Like, you can feel them padding out the runtime with how much of this movie is David Copperfield doing close-up magic.
Man, I had... So, for the David Copperfield stuff, I only had one note about it, and I was like, you know what this magician, what this magic show needs? Disco music. And then, days later, I'm in the shower, and I'm like, you should be dancing. I'm like, no. They should have changed it to "you should be slashing." After that, I wanted to just sing "More Than a Woman."
You should do a metal disco cover album called "You Should Be Slashing."
I don't know, man. Maybe after Guitarpender, but that's a tall order.
We'll see what happens after Guitarpender.
You can make it happen.
I believe in you, Scott, for sure. I did write down that, like, so I'm thinking of all the Jamie Lee Curtis horror films of the past, right? Halloween, Prom Night, The Fog. And a lot of those movies, Jamie Lee Curtis doesn't really know that anything's going on until the final act. Mm-hmm. Terror Train is interesting in that she is on the case, like, pretty early on.
Yeah.
But it also means that we get to see this this moment with Jamie Lee Curtis, I don't think I've ever seen in any of her other movies, where she has like a very realistic breakdown about her friend's death, where like the train conductor shows her Mitch's corpse and she like falls to the ground crying, where it's like, you know, everything else when she's finding her friend's dead body, she's already in survival mode with like Michael Myers chasing her or like a fog cloud after her. So it was, I don't know if I like that or don't like that, but I found it interesting that it's one of the first times that we see like a human reaction to finding out your friend is dead.
Well, especially because this ends up being kind of like her last horror movie until whenever.
Like Halloween H2O,
yeah,
maybe.
Right. So like,
but
so,
this is why, that's why she got Trading Places.
Yeah,
right? Because she had so much gravitas.
That's kind
showing
of
showing that she could act in this scene in question that they were like, get this woman out of horror.
That's right.
Get her into comedy.
That's right. That's right. David Copperfield, you stay. And he didn't stay in horror.
Yeah, the only film David Copperfield has ever not been David Copperfield.
Really weird flex, man.
I don't like David Copperfield. Like, I don't think that's a hot take.
You know,
I don't think
the whole time
I
was just
my opinion. He sucks.
He's not magic. He just has this like prick look to him.
He's got a prick look. And he looks like a boy prick. Like he looks like, you know, like, and not that kids are pricks. Kids are innocent and beautiful things.
Some
some are. Actually, that's not true because next week's movie.
Yeah, more
that.
More on that.
Oh,
jeez, sure.
I am so upset with you still.
but David Copperfield's like he's got a prick face. I don't want him on this train. And he's suspect. He's sus for sure. But clearly, as we've come to find out, he's not our guy. He's not our man. Spoiler alert. Sorry, guys.
Yes, David Copperfield is one of those people that I don't think there's ever been like a real controversial thing with. But if I found out that there was, I wouldn't
be shocked.
Shocked.
I wouldn't be shocked at all.
Like, well, I'd be so
you guys remember
that's what
that,
70s
like,
musicians did.
Yeah.
They just were kind of douchebags. And they paved the way for the David Blaines of the world. All I could think about was that, was it Funny or Die? Oh my God, David Blaine, you time traveling demon. That video, you remember that?
Like
I know that's dating me really bad.
I would love to see Terror Train with Chris Angel. I would love to see, that would be insane. That would be insane.
That's, I mean,
when
we have none of us have watched the remake. It's possible.
Yeah, why didn't they get David Tennant to play David Copperfield's character? Because he played the same fucking character in the Fright Night remake.
Yes.
Yeah, it would have been perfect.
I do like this one a little bit too. Like, I didn't hate. This is my least favorite time watching it, but I don't think that. And I think it was just because I did have it on in the background while I was editing. I like didn't
you're
get
alone,
to really like sit with
Doritos.
It, but I do.
Yeah.
I do like that it's kind of a little bit more of a whodunit than I remember, and I think that like naturally slashers are whodunits in like good better slashers, like A B slashers are usually whodunits, right? Like all the way through, there's some aspect or portion of that, but like this felt more like that than a slasher. There's not like memorable kills necessarily. There's like a couple memorable scenes, but like the kills are not. Anything.
The costumes way more
are
memorable than any of the kills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and part of me kind of likes that. Like, that's the charm of it for me.
There's one other thing that I have to call out about this movie, though. If we're talking about the most memorable kill to me is Kenny's. Hit that body hitting that ice is fucking brutal. Like, it looks like, you know, that it's just like a dummy, but like, the way that fucking dummy just, like, I think it was supposed to hit the water and it just missed the water for a second, and it looks so much more vicious and painful than I think they intended, but it works. You're like, Jesus Christ. And then the camera just follows the corpse as it sails down the river. And then for no reason, just like a 2-second quick shot of the train just like barreling by, and then credits.
That's
which is
life.
Something
you
die and the train
kept a rolling all night long.
It is something that I adore about the 70s, the late 70s, early 80s slasher movies, Halloween, all of these movies. It's just like, and the killer's dead, goodbye. Like there's no time to linger on like the ramifications of this. Like I feel like that became like a 90s thing, right? Like the Scream movies, you kind of like, they kill Billy and then there's like a couple shots of them like getting loaded into ambulances or whatnot. Like there's something. Not back then, man.
It ends.
It's just the end.
The end. The end.
I think it's the same thing with, like, no, I haven't watched Prom Night in a very long time, but I'm pretty sure Prom Night literally ends with just, like, someone getting decapitated and then just credits. Like, we talk about that in The Prowler, too. I think The Prowler's, like, head gets blown off and credits. Like, it's like, problem solved. I don't know what more we need to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he took out the trash.
Yeah.
Yeah. In this one, Kenny practically took the trash out himself.
Yeah.
He, like,
goodbye.
He, like, flailed around, and then they just, like, gently pushed. It happened so quickly that I, like, was looking away, and then I looked at my screen. I'm like, wait, when did he die?
Yeah, you're actually describing the scene, and I don't remember it, so.
Yeah, it's
I was
so
pretty
quick.
Checked out by the final scene. I'm just going to be honest with you guys.
No,
my notes stopped way long.
You gotta, this is, I agree wholeheartedly with Kyle. This is a movie about the bookends.
Yeah.
And the middle. You know, those Jimmy Eat World guys were full of shit.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps.
Woo!
Hi, friends. The world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
Matt, you picked this.
Mm-hmm.
So, save the night. What would your double feature be?
I don't know if I'm saving the night for anybody but myself, but I'm sticking in the same time period. I'm sticking with a film that is a little bit more supernatural than this, but this had a lot of magicians, and that movie has, and the movie that I'm going to double feature it with, has some magic in it, because I'm going to talk about 1978's Magic, starring Anthony Hopkins. A movie that I don't know if we'll ever actually do on this podcast.
You've talked about us doing it. Listen, we are so famous now that we can do whatever the fuck we want.
That is true. We did just get those Spotify numbers.
Yeah.
I'll have to rewatch Magic and decide. It's a movie that I like. I just don't know if it's a movie that...
You got a lot of bullshit on your list already, though, Matt.
Yeah, but Magic's also like... Well, Kyle, you've seen Magic, right?
Yeah, I love Magic.
It really is just like a two-man show for 90% of the movies. And that's where I'm like, I don't know if... It's like My Dinner with Andre, the 70s horror movie. Like, so I don't know. I don't know how much we'd really be able to mine through for the ha-has on that one. But yeah, Magic would be my double feature.
What about you, Kyle?
Magic was my one of mine, but I'm going to go with this. I got Terror Train for Christmas when Scream Factory like first started putting stuff out, and Scream Factory out. I just was like, Dad, get me Halloween 2 and 3 for Christmas. I really appreciate it. And I don't know if he ordered two other ones along with it or if Scream Factory recognized my name because I interviewed Jeff for Phantasm. But they sent me Terror Train along with all that. Anyway, I just want to pair it with Halloween 2. It gives me sort of like this warm, fuzzy feeling of when I opened it up at Christmas and like there was extra stuff. And Jamie Lee's in it and, you know, it's there. So Halloween 2 kind of gives me those vibes too.
It's fair. Nice. I mean, they're nice. Both Halloween movies to an extent.
Yes.
And I cannot believe that you guys didn't steal my pick. I'm going to go with the greatest magician to ever show up in the annals of Horror Movie Night. I'm going to go with the Ninja Magician and watch Demon Wind.
Absolutely.
I need to get back on my bullshit of like constantly picking Demon Wind, Dude Bro Party Massacre, and like Taming the T-Rex.
It's a fresh start, right?
2023, yeah. Coming at you hot.
Hot. Same movies.
It's hot, but it's cold. It's a gazpacho of double features. But Matt, what have you watched, listened to, read, experienced? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, it's still December, which means that it's still Christmas in my heart. So I'm going to talk about what was easily, not even any competition this year, the best new Christmas film of 2022, which was, of course, Spirited, that dropped on Apple TV. It's a 2-hour musical version of a modern take on Christmas Carol, starring Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell, with music from the team that wrote the songs for La La Land, Dear Evan Hansen, and The Greatest Showman. Wow. It is
so not a movie for Matt.
Delight.
He really thought he was going to hate
this
it.
This is out of left field for him. I can't believe he loved it.
It is so fucking funny and charming and delightful. And what I like about the movie, and stay tuned on Christmas 365, the month of January into February. Dylan and I are just covering all of the new Christmas stuff that dropped this year. But I'll talk about it more spoilery in that. But the musical numbers, they did something that was very unique, which was that it actually feels, when it breaks into a song, it actually feels like you're watching a Broadway production of something. Like it almost feels like it's on a stage with like the extras and the dancers, and not so much like a cinematic movie musical where it's like in this big set with like buildings and stuff. Like it drops the production values almost intentionally drop into like a black box theater style for a lot of the musical numbers, and I think it adds something to it.
That'd do it for me. I love that.
Yeah,
concept.
I don't know if either of you have watched it yet, but it's great.
Kyle?
I watched Terror Train 2022.
You did it.
You took that bullet.
I did it. I took that bullet train.
That Tubi original.
We had mentioned it off air in our chat. And Tubi's done a lot for me in my life, and I owed it to them to give them a shot. And look, it's not good. There's the clown mask. If anybody, I mean, the poster gives you the clown mask, and the clown mask is terrible. It feels like Killjoy and Drive-Thru's like nephew, which is bad. However, the movie has a lot of direct, remakes of like scenes, like shot for shot remakes of particular scenes. So the scene in which Kenny does go into the room, there's still a spinning of curtains, and like there's like shot for shot some of the same stuff that I thought was really interesting to include that. But it's shot you can see everything in this one as opposed to 1980. It's shot like a Lifetime movie, because the director is of that ilk. He did a lot of Lifetime movies. It does not matter. There was a queer kiss. There was a gay kiss, which was also good to see. And you know, the college kids are talking like college kids now. I mean, you're talking about Molly. You're talking about polyamorous relationships. Like
Molly and Polly.
You're talking about like cancel culture, and I don't think it all works very well.
Was it like a fucking Gen X writer who is like, I'm gonna make this for the kids?
You know what, dude? Yeah. I think it was. But here, all of this to say that I think Tubi is onto something here, where if they were to take slasher or horror properties from that era, give them to a director with a set of rules a la Lifetime or Hallmark that they do for their Christmas or even their thriller movies. Lifetime has like this, what you, if you were to give them the ability and be like, you have to take these 3 to 5 scenes and do them exactly how they were in the original. You can change a couple. Like, if there was a set of rules and Tubi was like, just go make this in Canada for, you know, less than $1 million. And it's, a horror property that, I mean, nobody's favorite movie is Terror Train, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, they remade Terror Train and we were like, we scoffed a little bit, but we weren't hurt by it. You know, if you could just get these properties and give fucking, like, just crank them out on Tubi, and then you can have the people would watch the original on Tubi. Just, I did them back to back. Like, I don't know. Like, hire me. Let me do one of these. Let me do Tourist Trap. Like,
I was literally going to ask you what would be the one you would do.
I would do Tourist Trap. Like, hands fucking down, I would do Tourist Trap.
Would you keep it PG or would you try to get it a hard R?
I think inevitably it wouldn't be PG, but I think that I would still want to try to do it like pretty bloodless. But I don't know. I also might want to like amp up the things that like could have had blood. I don't know. I think maybe I would go hard R, but I would just like, it's like turning the settings on a video game, blood and no blood. Like, I would I would still sort of follow the rules of, especially that first scene where he gets stabbed in the back and shit's flying at him.
Well, listeners, go, you start the campaign.
What would you guys pick? Would you guys have one that you would want to just like see a Lifetime remake of?
I know what I want. I want the Kyle version of Tourist Trap. That's easy.
Thank you for my two first backers.
I'm trying to.
I would love to see Bloodhook, but Bloodhook is too obscure for Tubi to be like. Or maybe it's not.
I still think Terror Train is fairly obscure in the grand scheme of 80 slasher movies.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've talked about it before, and I'm blanking on all of them now. But there's plenty of movies where I've said like, I'd love to see someone do
Intruder.
Another take at this idea. Intruder would be a good one.
I love Intruder. I love that movie so much.
Dr. Giggles.
Dr. Giggles. Oh, Jesus, of course.
Like, bring back Dr. Giggles and do it successfully enough to do a franchise. Like, that's what I
think they're going
to
do a Terror Train 2 on Tubi.
See? That's what I mean.
I think they announced it, yeah. I'm not positive.
Listen, and
don't
then we could even get Ice Cream Man and get... We can get Clint Howard back, because he's still alive, to be Ice Cream Man.
Oh, my God.
Again.
So good. You just like, you would just be like 20 years
later. I thought you were recasting Dr. Giggles since Larry Drake's.
Can we get Clint Howard as Dr. Giggles and Ice Cream Man in the same year? He's not busy.
Yeah. No, I'm sure he's free.
John Carroll Lynch as Dr. Giggles could be fucking huge.
There you go. All right. Well, Scott, how about you? What have you watched that you want to talk about?
You know, it's hard because it's hard for me to really get into some of the things that I've been watching because we're not done with them. But I will mention that we finished Andor and it was just phenomenal. It was so good.
Andor,
absolutely
what?
Loved it.
I was literally about to say, I recorded my uncle's podcast the other day, and the youngest host on that podcast is late 40s. And he mentioned, he's like, God, Andor is great. And the co-host was like, end or what? Like, and they were like, not being ironic. They were like,
that is a who's on first kind of thing.
Yeah. I didn't mean to derail you from this Terror Train, Scott, but continue.
Okay, well, that's what we're moving on. Bye.
Yeah, Andor, fantastic.
We're going to end this episode just like the end of Terror Train. Kyle killed it
and
jumped off. Yeah.
Anyway, no, I've heard nothing but good things.
I mean, well, here's the thing for me is that aside from the original trilogy, I just sort of like most Star Wars stuff. I mean, I love Mandalorian, but it's popcorn entertainment. Andor is like about big political ideas, social concepts that really like I was expecting it because Rogue One is arguably the best Star Wars movie of all time because it's Vietnam
actual
in space.
Star Wars?
Yeah, it literally is Vietnam in space. And it's like heart-wrenching and it's deep and it's about these political and social issues. Like, but the great stuff about Andor is, I mean, there are some really cool surprises I'm not going to let anybody in on. I'm not going to talk about them, rather. I'm like, just watch the show if you love Star Wars. If you are even, like, if you like the original trilogy, like, watch Star Wars or watch Andor, and it's phenomenal. I mean, but there is a point where two characters are having kind of a political intrigue discussion, and they have to speak kind of in just they're being vague, and they're drinking blue drinks, and I just love that, because it's not like they're drinking a red drink, they're drinking a blue drink. And I can hear the unsubscribe button clicking like in the distance, but I just, the Empire is one side of the political spectrum, the Rebellion is another, and I just loved the visual line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To that, I mean, that's there's smart. A lot in the show, but that's just a great example of what they do. I mean, the costumes are amazing, and just
Disney Plus has really proven, and this is not a diss on the Star Wars movies, because there are at least 4.5 that I will really go for back.
I can say
on.
The same thing.
Yeah,
there are 4.5 that I will watch.
But like, Star Wars has proven on Disney Plus anyway that it is a better franchise the further away it gets from the Skywalker saga, and the more it's just exploring the other thousands of planets and worlds and possibilities.
Andor is really the only thing that's truly giving us that. I mean, yeah. Mandalorian still has a direct line to the Skywalkers.
It dipped its toe in, but then even then, I would say that Mandalorian started to lose its footing the more that it started to walk back
absolutely.
Into the Skywalker
no, the
stuff.
The first, like, all of the first season and the first half of the second season are flawless. Second half of the second season, meh. I mean, it's still good. I loved watching it, but I wouldn't probably like rewatch. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
The more that we step away from the things that were precious to us as children and just let it be this living, breathing universe. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with how I'm getting to that point where the more that a Marvel movie isn't tied to the bigger picture of whatever phase, the more likely I am to enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that we're getting that with Star Wars at this point. The further we get away from Skywalkers, the more I'm invested in the story anymore. Because it's also like, well, why would you ever bet against the Skywalkers? Like, it's kind of like that.
They always win.
Yeah, it's like, all right, whatever. Like, I know that this is going to be all right. So, I don't know. That's my... but yes, I agree. Andor was fantastic.
I've had enough of you guys for one week.
That was Terror Train. We will be back next week with the movie that y'all voted for on our Black Friday poll. And homeboy Matt Kelly could not be more excited about it. So stay
He's
tuned
gonna be singing
and
his praises.
Strap in. I'm going to be saying, listen, tonight is what it means to be.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include 7 best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs 2 of our hosts that have seen a show with 2 of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lueb of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps. Woo!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.